Welcome to the inaugural Change Society podcast. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Pat Lines, CEO and founder of SNS, the Change Society. To explain for those new to us, Sullivan & Stanley, or SNS as our clients call us, is a crowd-based company made up of top 5% executive recruiters, change agents, technology leaders and interim professionals who formed to challenge the status quo in a very tired recruitment and consulting industry. We're a next generation interim and consulting company, and we exist really to help our clients solve business problems around people, technical and organisational debt, whilst also giving them the ability and agility to future-proof their organisations for the next decade. And we do this by providing teams of high-powered, experienced interim professionals. So the Change Society, it consists of around 500 senior interim associates now across agility, digital, technology and leadership. And our vision really is to catalyse an interim revolution. So we really want to help interims stand out, find their voice and bring them together via thriving communities. So today we'll be welcoming two of the people from the Change Society onto this podcast. So I'm very pleased to welcome Adrian Stallam, who is a partner of SNS, and Jacqueline Shakespeare, Jax for short, who is one of our trusted associates, who is going to discuss the journey that she went on to become an interim. And I think Jacqueline's personal story is very apt to launch today on Women's Independence Day 2017. And we'll be discussing the journey that she went on from, you know, becoming a, you know, successful career in the telecoms industry to becoming more of a working part-time mum, and then choosing interim management as a mechanism to be able to spend time with her family whilst also realising her ambitions to get back into leadership and large-scale transformation. So we'll be talking through that, as well as some other things around the future of work and maybe challenging some of the old paradigms around how organisations work. So as Adrian knows Jax very well, I'll let him set the context, and I very much hope you enjoy the podcast.
My name is Adrian Stallam. My background is in various industries, telco, retail, financial services, life sciences. Background in delivery of major change through projects and programs, more recently with agility transformations, and current interests really in systems thinking approaches to organisations and their organisational debt, and org design to help deal with the future of work. My interest in this subject is I had the privilege of working with an incredible team, a high-performing team, in my career, and that was made up of a group of full-timers, but also a group of people who were part-time and flexible working. There were some working mothers in that team. Incredible team, brilliant teamwork, very high performing. As I said, it's and I guess my interest is finding working solutions that allow you to bring in fantastic talent, rather than maybe missing that talent because of the sort of predefined structure of work of sort of 5 days a week, 9 to 5. And I've experienced that, and seen the effect of how incredibly productive and creative people can be when the work profile suits them rather than they try and fit into the work profile. So that's why I'm interested in this subject, and I look forward to the conversation we're about to have.
And right now, I'll just hand you over to Jacqueline Shakespeare's story and the rest of the podcast.
So my name's Jacqueline Shakespeare, and I part associate of Sullivan & Stanley. I've been interim for about 18 months after leaving a permanent position, having been with an organisation for a number of years. So my focus has always been on delivery, and these days very much my area of expertise is around change and transformation programmes.
And where are you currently working?
I am currently placed with BCG.
And how's that gig been?
It's been absolutely fantastic, you know, really fascinating. Great first gig as an interim. Really interesting piece of work, completely different culture than I've been in before. So learning huge amounts in terms of delivering change in a very different organisation. They're very, very quality focused. And also incredibly flexible in terms of how they approach work, and it's all about driving value or delivering value rather than kind of where you are and when you're working. So that's great, and you know, quite pertinent to some of the conversations we're going to have today.
Yeah, that's quite refreshing for a consulting, global consulting firm like that.
Yeah,
super.
Cool. So Jax, before we get into a little bit more about the flexibility that you have at the moment with that interim work at BCG, I'm interested a little bit in the story to how you became interim. I wonder if you can just take us through that story.
Yeah, so I, you know, my background in this dovetails nicely into the fact that I'm all about delivery. Engineering background very early on, did an engineering degree which, you know, very structured and kind of played to my values and ways of working really nicely. Spent about five years in construction and then moved over to telco, joined one-to-one, and it was who's your one-to-one with, or who did you have a one-to-one with, and really brilliant company to start work with. It felt very young, very new, very felt like a startup to a certain extent still, and we were constrained by some of the barriers that larger organisations or more mature organisations are. And that organisation evolved over the years into T-Mobile, which then had a very different culture, obviously with a parent company in Germany. Then the merger with Orange, and between when I joined and that point, I'd had opportunities to work in many different areas of one-to-one and T-Mobile, all project-based. Then I moved into governance and planning, that gave me another string to my bow, and had the opportunity to work right in the centre of the T-Mobile and Orange merger, which was fascinating, so around the PMO office. And then got another role, or got a new role in the new organisation of Everything Everywhere as the head of benefits realisation and planning.
And can I just ask, did you have a flexible working agreement here? You're permanent at this moment, aren't you?
So. No, that's a really good point, actually. So I had children on the way, missed that one out. So I was very focused on my job, as I tend to be 9 to 5 every day. But so I had my daughter in 2005, and I went back to work full time after that. And I found that really, really tough, to be honest. Being a mum, I'd left her, she was 6 months old when she went into then full-time childcare. Found that really difficult. That was probably the most difficult working period of my life. Work was very important to me still. It was essential that I did work. Unfortunately, it's not really an option for me. But at the same time, you know, the real positives there and a reason why many people work, not just women, in terms of gave me a sense of purpose, it gave me that outlet in the adult conversations. And I always felt right from the beginning, even before my daughter was aware of it, it was really important to me that I was a positive role model to her. So yes, I had Amelie, and I worked for then until my son was born in 2007 full time. And after that, there were a series of redundancies whilst I was off on my second maternity leave, and there was actually a job role that was carved up for me that I could take part time. So then I went down to 3 days a week, which was really, really, really great. I'm not sure that role I came back to really stretched me. Probably I stagnated a little bit for that period of time. It was kind of okay. It was a compromise I was willing to accept at the time.
How long was that period?
A couple of years, probably. I think, I'll tell you when it didn't. Actually, when I moved on to the merger work, that was when then I kind of got plucked out, and it was right, into the centre of London, into this anonymous office, go do that piece of work. And really, that was when, actually, that's quite an interesting point, Pat, that was really when my career started, you know, kicked off again.
So you mentioned Everything Everywhere and essentially getting a job as head of benefits realisation. But from what I remember, that was quite short-lived. Can you talk us through that bit? There's a brave and interesting decision made.
So I made a decision. So I, you know, it was great to get a senior role in the new organisation. So that was fantastic. There were a lot of people leaving, a lot of people said, you know, it was a real time of change within the organisation and there was a new culture to build. And so I was really pleased that I got that. That was a natural progression for me, having had the role I had for the previous 2 years in terms of quite PMO governance slanted. At the same time, there were new teams being set up across the business with some really interesting pieces of work behind them. There was a multi-channel team that was being set up to define the strategy and also what the roadmap of change was coming off the back of that. And that looked really, really, really appealing to me. So I decided to jump across to that team. The big decision for me at that time was I had made head of in the new organisation. So there was a status there was a hierarchy, there was a demonstration of career progression. That was great. The new role that I took actually was a grade down. So many people at the time really struggled to understand why I'd made the decision I made. And I did it for job satisfaction, for my own happiness in my career. Yeah. And I took a risk. I took a risk that I hoped would pay off and ultimately did. I fear that if I'd stayed in a PMO governance role, the longer I stayed there, the more difficult it would be to jump out. Whereas actually the story that I had at that time was I'd done a lot of delivery, I'd done some governance and planning and business investment, then I stepped out again. So it became just a breadth of experience that I had rather than me and who I was in totality.
Yep. So of course, it wasn't long before they tried again to make you a head of and you took a slightly different role again, but having a very important stakeholder.
So it was a huge period of change and really trying to establish the culture, the way of working, recognising that big pieces of change needed to happen to make us efficient as an organisation, make those operational savings, etc. And we had Mark O'Leary join the organisation as the Chief Commercial Officer, and I ended up running a big programme of transformational change for him, which was around building a very significant new channel for the organisation, which off the back of it, considerable revenue. And it very much changed the way that people worked across all of the retail and customer services operations. And it was brilliant. I mean, I loved it. It was one of my favourite periods of my career. And off the back of that, really that head of role then was shaped for me, in effect. And that was a brilliant period, as I say. I really enjoyed it. But then, as with all things, the organisation keeps changing, and some things work one day and they don't work the next day. And the organisation moved into a different period where they were really readying themselves for the BT takeover. And that felt less of the right space for me. And I recognised that I'd been there for a long period of time, and actually I didn't want to say that forever. Mm-hmm. I needed to change. And I needed my next new thing. You know, who I am, I get quite bored quite easily. And I don't mean within 4 weeks. What I mean is 12, 18 months, 2 years down the line, I'm ready for my next new challenge. And I was ready for my next new challenge. And I'm fortunate at that point, having had so many brilliant opportunities within that organisation, I didn't think that was the right place for me. I couldn't see what that opportunity was. So I really had to take a look hard in terms of what I wanted to do next.
Mm, and I'm guessing there's potentially a conflict here, right? So there's a need to chase new opportunity, but you've got flexible working,
yeah.
You've got a long career with probably a very good pension. It's convenient. What was really going on in your head there? I'm guessing that was a tough time.
It was very difficult. Yeah, there are many great things about working for an organisation like that. The stability, to a certain extent, as you say, is a really great pension. You know where you are at the end of every month financially. The career opportunities are kind of, you can kind of second guess what they will be. You know everybody. So there was a lot of safety in staying where I was. But my kids were a little bit older. By then I was 4 days a week over five. So I was working at home 2 days a week for half a day, working in the office 3 days a week. That worked really, really well for me. But, you know, I had to also consider what I wanted next in terms of my... It wasn't about career progression, because I'm not bothered about hierarchy. I'm not aspiring to be director for some organisation. If I was, I would never have made the decision I did. But it was about being challenged and being happy and fulfilled in my career for me. And I really looked around me and looked at how kind of the project management, type program management industry was going, and how people were. I could see a lot of people moving from permanent to interim, and you know, both yourself and another colleague of ours, I'd seen you both do that very successfully. And I really looked to the two of you for guidance and support in terms of whether that might be a good move for me in the future.
Okay, so you've made that sound really easy. Okay. That was, I'm guessing it was more of a challenge. That final decision, the decision to go, you know what, I'm gonna end a permanent job where I've been here a good few years with an environment that suits me around flexibility. I'm well known, well respected, but I'm gonna walk away from it.
I am always glass half full. yes, so... Yeah, so being honest and open about it, it was the hardest decision I have ever made. It took every brave molecule in my body to make that move, and I did it relatively quickly when people around me were looking at me. In reality, I've been thinking about it for 18 months, 2 years, and I've been watching other people. I've been looking at how people did it, and I've been working out whether that was the right move for me. So really, those last 3 weeks... where it was from the moment I said, right, I'm going to have to seriously consider this, to the deadline I set myself for making a decision was 3 weeks, which was quite a hard 3 weeks, because I not only had to convince myself of that change, it was the right thing to do, but I also had to convince my husband that it was the right thing for me to do, because it was a big risk for the family and not just for me, and it had an impact on us. And one of the reasons it was a very, very difficult decision was because, as you say, I had that part-time working. That worked really, really well for me, and I was jumping into the unknown. And for me, that was a huge thing that had kept me at EE. The better the devil you know. And I don't think I'm alone in that in terms of how other women feel as well. You know, if you get part-time work, wow. I mean, it's like gold dust. You feel like you've got a real thing there, and you never want to disrupt that. However many other things are going on around you that you might not be so happy with or comfortable with, you'll compromise, because that actually is the most important thing. And that was very much the case for me. So making that leap from 4 days, which I knew worked, I had the whole infrastructure underneath me, I had my childminder worked on the days, and I knew how it all worked, right? And what I was suggesting at that point was disrupting that and jumping into the unknown. And that was a really, really, really tough decision for me to make. The toughest decision I've ever made, as I say.
And what was the tipping point? So I can imagine, I think of some of the big decisions I've made, there's always been a pros and a cons list. So, I mean, could you share? I mean, there's so many people that would be listening to this podcast now thinking, you know, I've made that change, I've been through it. Or some people may be listening to it thinking, I'd like to make that change. So I think it'd be good for maybe some of the listeners to go through some of those pros and cons that you weighed up, and what was the tipping point for you to think, I'm going to do it?
So I think when I was looking forward or ahead, from when I was in my last permanent role, and actually it's not dissimilar to when I look now in terms of what my next role will be. It will be a permanent interim, it doesn't really matter. It's about what that piece of work entails. Is it a big, and I always hesitate about using the word transformation because I think it's overused a little bit, but is it a really big disruptive piece of change that's going to fundamentally change the way people work in an organisation? It's going to make them uncomfortable, and I need to help them through that. That's the kind of piece of work that I want to do. So that would be the first thing that I would look at. And that's why when I looked around me, I couldn't, because the climate was different where I was, and it just wasn't the focus of the organisation at the time, that's why I felt that my next opportunity didn't lie there. So that was one of the pieces. And then inevitably, it's also got to be around, you know, does it fit with my family life? Can I give my family the opportunities that I want them to have over the next few years? What does that look like? Those were the kinds of things that I looked at when I was making that jump. And I had to almost just put some of my fears behind me, and I just had to just stop myself worrying about working. You know, working 5 days a week was a big, big concern to me when it was huge. And it's an ongoing concern for me now. What's my next gig going to look like? Am I going to be under pressure, or is there going to be an expectation for me to be sat in a chair Monday to Friday, 9 to 5? Because if there is, I'm not going to end up as a very happy associate. And I'm not going to be, and more importantly, I'm not going to be doing the best job that I could be doing. Because if I get that balance right, I know I'm better at work.
Yeah. So we're going to come back to that in a second. But I guess, you know, you're 18 months into the interim world now. I'm going to offer you... head of in a big telco, permanent, 4 days a week. Would you take it?
No.
Why not?
And it's really interesting that the clarity of my thinking is absolutely there.
Straight no.
Yeah, it is a straight no. And it's not to say that at some point the right job won't come along in a permanent you know, as a permanent position. It's not to say, never say never, you know, in any world, never say never. But right now, I feel that the interim world absolutely suits me. My confidence is up in terms of my own abilities, and I'm not somebody who would normally say that. I'm not the person that kind of stands up and says things like that, but actually absolutely is. I love the variety of the work. I love the fact that after having been in telco for 15 years, I can now look ahead to the next 10 years and think, well, I could be working in 4 or 5 different industries in that time, if not more, with different people. I get to work with different people, build my network in different ways. I love working with people. I love having the opportunity to work with great people that I can learn from, you know, however that team dynamic works. Love new experiences, love new pieces of work. And actually, by moving from one organisation to a next, you're not just shifting a little bit slightly in terms of the piece of work you're doing. You're probably going to be doing something radically different, which is great. So it keeps my interest up.
That's great. And it sounds like the interim role you're in at the moment has a level of flexibility. It allows you to work from home, allows you to pick up the kids sometimes, drop off at school, all those great flexible things that we love out of a role. But I guess the concern from your side is that maybe the next one won't have that. Maybe the expectation is 5 days a week in the office in the centre of London. So I guess let's go on a little journey. So I'm going to go in my little time machine, and I'm going to go forwards 10 years, and we're going to meet for coffee. And in that 10 years, you have managed to land a number of other interim roles in that time, and they've all been brilliantly flexible. Flexible that to the level that have kept you happy in exactly how you wanted to run your life and balance work and lifestyle. Talk me through that future journey of 10 years and the kind of organisations they were, how accepting they were of maybe different types of working but we're imagining here that you've had a great 10 years and you've had those great contracts.
Yeah, I think that for me, I'm going to answer a slightly wider question in terms of why that's great. And I think for me, one of the most important things is about the culture. And that's what I look forward to experiencing in my next few gigs in terms of learning different or experiencing different cultures. But I know, even without going into it, I know that the culture that I'm best into is obviously one that is comfortable-ish with change. There wouldn't be any challenge or any role if they were completely fabulous at it. But one that, you know, is quite dynamic, quite good change, quite fresh thinking. But also, for me, on a very personal level, if it's a successful 10 years in terms of whether I've worked in the way I want to work, there is absolutely a strong element of flexibility through that. And where I am with my children now, I don't necessarily need part-time because they're at school all the time. But what I do want is I want to be able to go to the school play. If my son has an assembly, I want to be able to go to that. I want to be able to go and read to him in World Book Week, you know, World Book Day this on Thursday. And getting the balance for me between working hard and having a fulfilling career and giving, you know, driving that value that I want to drive as part of my professional persona, but also being there for my kids and them not feeling like they've just got two parents that they never see. And that would be failure for me if I have a fantastically successful career, but actually my kids can't remember who I am. So that would be a series of gigs that give me that would be successful.
So where are organisations going wrong? Where are some of them going wrong? Obviously BCG seem to have it right. There are some other very forward-thinking companies that have this flexibility just built in. It's just through the DNA. But what's going wrong in other companies with regards to this flexibility?
Yeah, I think I wonder whether the way organisations think and set themselves up is now a little bit outdated when you compare it against the speed of our technological advances and the way we communicate, social media, living in the digital age, you know, all that's very forward thinking and very fast paced, and yet our organisations are quite often still set up in the way that they were tens of years ago. And actually, when you think about bringing diversity to a team, and we all recognise, you know, very well established thinking in terms of you want different people in a team to make it at its optimum to drive the most value, then actually you want people in there that you know, perhaps are working mums that just don't want to be doing that 9 to 5 Monday to Friday piece. I think that I would love, you know, we're having a conversation about what that next 10 years looks like. I would love that to not be an issue. That's when we really achieve success.
Yeah.
It's when it's not an issue anymore. So people don't, organisations don't need flexible working policies or guidance to how many days a week you need to be in the office, because it's just not an issue anymore. That's success to me. And that's more than, for obviously me and my own personal experience, that's about me being a working mother. But there are a far broader group of people than me that would love flexibility in the way that they work. And that potentially, we're just not tapping into to those people.
Yeah, and that's true. Yes, it's kind of theory X management versus theory Y management. And unfortunately, there's still too much of theory X around, where everyone assumes that people need to be managed and incentivized and people are inherently lazy. I think you've got some examples of having a manager who did not like people working from home, not because they wanted them in the office to interact with them, not because they wanted to say hello to them even. It was just a visual cue.
Yeah.
You're in the office, and therefore everything's good with the world.
Very much a belief that you're only working if you sat at your desk. And actually, when I look at when I'm have my clearest moments of thinking or my most creative moments,
yeah,
it's actually not sat in front of a PC.
No,
you know,
no,
it might be when I go and clear my head at lunchtime, or it might be when I go for a run, or it might be any of those moments, but it's actually not sat there at a desk with noise going on all around you. Absolutely.
And I guess this is, talk to me a little bit about what the art of the possible is with regards to the untapped talent. Because this is important for working mums, and I get that. I'm married to a working mum, right? So I absolutely get it. And the guilt of the working mother, right? I get that every day. But it's more than that, right? It's more than just working mums, isn't it?
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, there are whole groups of people out there, and whether they are working and just not satisfied with the way that they have to work, or whether it's that they're not working at all, it could be one or the other, but there could be a whole different set of reasons as to why somebody wants either part-time or flexible, which I do think is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be that somebody has a passion for landscape gardening and actually they run a small business, but that isn't giving them the level of financial income that they need, for instance. So actually they need to subsidise that with a different way of working. So they might want to come and work for 3 months and then disappear for 6 months and then do another burst for 3 months. So there are different, it might be just that they're trying to follow their passion, but their passion isn't sustainable for them in the long term. Or it might be that somebody has some elderly parents they want to care for and they just need some flexibility. Mm. So I just think there are whole groups of people out there where this whole very traditional model of working, it doesn't quite fit these days. And actually, I think where I come from is, does it matter? It matters today because we have a belief system or a setup where it does matter. But really, does it matter? Mm. Does it matter if somebody does half a day on a Saturday? Does it matter?
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I speak to quite a number of execs and change agents and interims and just candidates that come into our business, and they're looking to make that change. They're starting to talk about wanting to choose a journey over a career. Mm. They want to actually enjoy their lives and start realizing passions and spending more time with family and being able to choose the work that they pick up and focus on. There was something you mentioned just a minute ago about there being a difference between part-time and flexible, and I know that's quite important to you. I mean, can you kind of fill that out a bit in terms of what your challenge to industry should be, what your challenge or invitation to HRDs and org design specialists and chief execs around, how they could possibly, look at that untapped talent by, getting in between the difference between part-time and flexible and showing more flexibility?
Mm. I mean, certainly in terms of, for me, what the difference is between part-time and flexible, and I think people use part-time as a catch-all. Perhaps if it doesn't touch them, there's no reason why they should go deeper in their thinking, but part-time's fairly obvious as we all understand it, in terms of you're not working your 37 hours a week or whatever that might be, 9 to 5 over 5 days. There's obviously the condensed model as well, where you work 5 days over four or whatever that is, but the flexible one's slightly different. And it may be, for me certainly, when my children were younger, part-time was more relevant to me because I had to have the right childcare in place at the right time, and I had to be able to predict what I was doing week on week. Whereas now my children are at school, actually what's much more important to me is that flexibility. So they're at school during term time, and as I said, I just want to be able to pop in and help with art week or whatever it is. But then during the holidays, I'd love to have a little bit more flexibility, and that might be working at home, but it might be just taking off some more time as well. But it's much more of a flexible model without compromising at all the outcome. So in terms of just, let me give you an example in terms of how I work sometimes. So my son likes me to take him into school on the Monday. So I get up at the same time, do an hour's work, bundle him into his overcoat, make sure he's got his homework with him, his packed lunch, and I walk him to school. And then I carry on, I walk to the station, I go into work, and I'm in work half an hour, 40 minutes later than other people, but I've already done an hour's work. So there's no compromise there to be made. Sometimes I think that part-time workers get a bit of a bad press because there's an assumption that they're trying to take the easy life, and well, wouldn't it be nice if we could all do that? Well, actually, most people who are part-time work jolly hard to get there, you know, and it's probably taken a really long time. And as I say, I worked full-time when I went back after my daughter. I did not want to do that at all, but I didn't have an option. And I felt it took me 2 or 3 years to get to the point where I was given part-time. I kind of had to earn it. And there's no way I would ever let anybody challenge me as to whether I didn't put 100% in. And in fact, when I was head of transformation at EE, I would say probably 75% of people didn't know I was part-time. Because I was always on the end of the phone. I would check my emails. And I never said that because of the bad press associated with it. I never wanted anybody to think that I didn't take my job seriously. And I felt that's what would happen in that environment. And I look at that and I think, God, what sort of role model is that for other women? It's awful. But I also think, actually, wasn't that great, but nobody ever knew. You know, and now I have the permission, you know, the culture is very much more around working flexibly, and I do take my son into school on a Monday and a Friday, and I work at home on a Friday, usually work at home at least one other day in that week. But then at 9 o'clock at night, I'm always on our instant messaging, talking to various other people in the team, just making sure we've got our thoughts straight for the next day. And I never mind doing that for 1 minute because it's all give and take, you know?
So I think there's a couple of things that we've kind of touched on, and I know we've spoken about it, Adrian, quite a bit, and Jax, we spoke about it before we kicked off this podcast, but, you know, organisations getting away from more kind of, you know, trading time for money or the time that you're in an organisation or the hours that you're working and more concentrating on kind of value and outcomes. I mean, what's your view on how the interim model could tweak or change to try and reflect that and accommodate more flexible workers?
Really focus on the value that you drive as an interim rather than the number of hours that you do and the specific work that you do. You know, it feels like a much more mature, trusting way of working when you look at the future way of working.
Yeah, I mean, consulting firms contract for outcomes, don't they? I mean, don't see why it couldn't be any difference where, you know, interims or, you know, groups of interims, you know, contract for, you know, an outcome or value that they're creating regardless of time.
And this plays really nicely into some of the agile work we do, which is really, you know, trying to move away from resource utilization, right? Yeah, number of days worked times number of hours is resource utilization. That's just a measure of how busy you are, right? And in actual fact, it drives people to be busy. It doesn't drive people to actually get things done. You know, in lean, we say, don't, you know, in a relay race, follow the baton, not the runners, right? Because if you follow the runners and it's a 4x100, everyone's got a 25% utilization rate. That's appalling. An accountant would make them run around whilst they're waiting for the baton. Yep. In actual fact, you follow the work. Certainly, I mean, my experiences of having working mums working for me, and I've had quite a few, is the amount of value they generate is wholly disproportionate to the number of hours they're in, right? they run rings around a lot of the permanent staff I've ever had. And it just, you know, that ability to focus, to know that actually you are time boxed to 3 days this week. I've got a lot to get done. That huge amount of focus and effort on getting an outcome, incredibly powerful.
Yeah. I had two working mums in my division in the last recruitment business I was in, and one worked 4 days, the other one worked three, and both were top 10% performers.
No surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But there's a real piece, isn't there, for us to, I think, to help educate the market and the industry and out there, because, you know, we still do define work unfortunately, as pretty much as 9 to 5, 5 days a week. And when people come looking for teams or looking for great interim individuals, it's just assumed it's 5 days a week, 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. And we probably need to, that's probably the paradigm we need to break. I think Jack, you said it earlier, that if you can break that mental model, that's the way we do work, then having flexible working, part-time working, and all those other things is just obvious.
Yeah, it becomes, it's not an issue.
You know, the tooling's there now. We're not held back by tools and communication devices. You know, that's all mature enough now to allow us to do flexible working. There's almost no excuse. Unfortunately, what probably is the biggest barrier are our old management methods. You know, the person who wants to see you in the office, not to talk to you, not to say hello, but if you're in the office, you're doing work. Well, I'm sorry, but no, you're not. Right? You're just in the office. That's all. That's the only thing you've measured. Presence in the office, right? And nothing else. And I think Jack actually said a great thing there, which was my most creative moments haven't been sat in front of my PC at work. Having a shower in the morning, some people they find that's their most creative. Down the gym first thing or after work, you know. We often find that actually sat in front of a PC is not our most productive time. So there's lots that needs to change.
Yeah, it feels like we're kind of getting to that point, especially with the, you know, looking at untapped talent, but we've been talking about it for a while, about, you know, the talent drain and the war for talent and the capability gap that's widening in large organisations, because it's not just interims, it's people from all generations. A lot of millennials now want to freelance. They want to work with organisations, not for them. So it feels that org design does need to change. That sort of management mindset needs to break down. I mean, what would be your suggestion, Adrian, to someone who, you know, might be listening to this, around, you know, some steps they could take to start creating more flexible working solutions
in an organisation? So I think my view of organisations at the moment is we're stuck in models we were using 50 years ago. There's a lot of good concepts out there now. There's a lot of good knowledge out there. There's a lot of good companies championing new ways of working, and we need to get the HR departments of this world to start raising their heads up to look at these new models. It is not just about managing the resources in your company. It is about hosting talent, right? Quite often we bring talent into, we spend a lot of time trying to bring talent into an organization and then essentially stifle them through bureaucracy and process and the system, as it were, sort of stifles them. How many times have we seen someone come in with huge enthusiasm in the first 6 months, going to change the world, tries everything, gets battered down, and actually within a year they're pretty much just one of the worker drones, right? It's a learned helplessness. The system wins. They become part of the system. They've tried to change it. It's too big to change, and therefore we become. So, you know, organizations, sometimes you've got the talent in your organization. Unfortunately, you're stifling it. You're dumbing the whole organization down because of the way the organization's designed, because of the organizational debt you've built into there through process and policy and all this other kind of thing that just creates a tar around the organisation and people feel they can't move any further.
So would you be more towards sort of more flat hierarchy and decentralised networks of teams to deliver things for businesses, or do you still think hierarchy as a place to play in org design and the future of work?
Yeah, I think there's... So I'm a fan of decentralisation. Absolutely make decisions where the work's being done. The problem a lot of companies have, and people ask, yeah, but how are we going to manage the people? We've just done an org design right recently for a financial services company where we've looked at the Scrum teams and how we do people management. And we've come up with some really creative ways of doing that. In reality, it's a false dichotomy if we think about whether it's decentralized or a hierarchy. Because hierarchy, people think about leadership and management, and surely we can't not have that in a decentralized model. My thinking, especially around decentralized models in Agile, is that in actual fact, you still do need leadership. What you don't need so much is management. And, you know, the whole kind of concept of between what's the difference between a manager and a leader, we are still bogged down with managers, and managers like to see people in offices. In actual fact, you know, I've talked about self-empowered teams. Self-empowered teams don't happen by accident, right? Just by taking the leader away and going, oh, well, you're all leaders now, and we're all the same, and blah, blah, blah. It just doesn't happen, right? Actually, sometimes you need a leader, a servant leader, to come in and not manage the team, but to help handhold them to self-empowerment. I think, I absolutely think, and it might be a 6-month job, but you're in there as a leader, not to manage the team, not to manage the work, not as a hierarchy, but to give permission, to handhold, to role model self-empowerment, and to coach them into that way of working, and then you can move on. And so hierarchy and leadership, hierarchy maybe not so much, but leadership can still be there in a decentralized model. But the whole engine world is always talked about, oh yeah, I like contract because it allows me to be flexible. I'm never going to use that flexibility if I can help it, because every day is billable.
But it's the choice to walk, and it's the choice to accept or reject a gig.
Mm.
Yeah, that's powerful.
But it's flexibility also, Jax, from a different point choice. Of view, right? So if I was saying, oh, it's great, Jax, I can choose to take the summer off if I want to, what I actually mean is I work 5 days a week and then I stop. And then I start working 5 days a week. The flexibility you're talking about is different to that, right? It might be that, but it is also the ability to take your son to work to school on a Monday morning and to pick him up on a Friday, and still to work from home and to work at 7 o'clock at night if you need to, because that just.
But I the reason I'm unsure about that is I think the first model you're talking about, I think there is a thought that in the interim world will give you that, and you absolutely can. So you can arrange, you can go, oh, that's great. So end of the contract's middle of June, that's great. I'll take the summer off, spend time with my family. In reality, you then get to the, okay, well, can I afford to do that? Or this great gig's turned up, can I afford to turn that down? And the reality of that is very different to the promise. But then that's your choice, so that's okay. Yeah? So maybe there's that there. I think that the flexibility you're talking about with me in the current role I'm doing is less to the fact that I'm interim, more to the fact that I just happen to have found a position in a very flexible, culturally open organisation. And the other thing I'd say, role model to kids, well, that's any working woman in a good position.
But some of those, you look at those last three.
Yeah.
Those last three are part of the advice to someone who might even be a stay-at-home mum right now, or might be a lady who lunches, who actually is missing some of this, right? The benefit of this answer, my view, is there's a talent pool out there that's untapped, right? It's the people who don't dare go interim. It's the people who don't get interim because it's a massive jump, or because if I do that, it's 5 days a week, 9 to 5.
But I think it's more than that as well. It's about getting the best out of your people. So if you look wider in terms of the future of work, actually, some people do want flexibility, part-time, whatever. But actually, at some points, we've been discussing wider than that in terms of what does the future of work look like? What should it look like to get the best out of people?
Yeah, I see it. That's the link, because you were talking about decentralized. And if we boil down the fact that you can run a day rate through a limited company, if we boil down the fact that you might have the flexibility to choose a gig per gig, one of the big pulls is that you're able to actually go in and focus on a particular piece of work that you can choose.
Yeah.
So, you know, the future of work should be where there's such a decentralized organization where people are moving from gig to gig to project to project, whether they're paid permanent or day rate.
Yeah.
Mm.
That is radical.
It's interesting. Sweet.
But it's true, isn't it? You know, because if you think about AI or, AI bots, all that kind of back office administrative stuff in time will be gone, or a lot of it will be gone. So what's left, it's the design, the creating, the changing, the pivoting, the strategy. It's the key knowledge workers. It's knowledge workers, whether you're interim or permanent. And that's why at the moment, that's why I'm very into the interims as a mechanism for organisations to get that rapid change, because they can bring in groups of individuals to help with that shift. I mean, but the benefit to interims, I mean, we've covered that. I mean, would that be a draw enough for you to go back to permanent?
You can look at what we do now, and actually in some ways, if I'm really going to simplify it, actually the difference between me being permanent and me being interim is the words on a piece of paper, which is literally a piece of paper,
true.
And my mindset.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's actually all it is. You know, some people take permanent jobs for 18 months, 2 years.
Which is, you know, it's a leadership position, isn't it? By very nature, it's interim anyway, because...
Yeah, because they're to do a
most organisations should change a leader every 3 or 4 years just to get fresh thinking. Yeah, fresh styles.
That's interesting. I think Sweden, Norway, one of the Scandinavian countries, did a study recently where they took the working day down to 6 hours. Very, very short break instead of lunch, and you cracked on for 6 hours instead of 8.5. And I think they saw minimal drop in productivity.
Imagine how focused you'd be.
Well, exactly.
Oh, I'd love
right,
that.
You've got 6 hours. We need you to produce this outcome by Friday at 2.
Do you know what, though? Also, people, and this is about, again, it's about getting the best out of people. Some people, me, for instance, work far better to a deadline.
Oh, yeah,
I do as well.
Yeah, you say 2 o'clock, we'll get that done. I'm there.
So, dissertation fear, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, we'll kick into this. It's in 2 days. I've got to do it now.
He goes, oh, can you do that? I'm like, yeah, but when do you need it by? And he's like, I'm like, honestly, give me a day. It'd be much better. Otherwise, I'll drift with it.
Yeah.
if you look at that future of work piece and you actually do change the culture of organisations, the way they're set up, you embrace a longer working day, but actually it's not working all the time because you go home so you can cook your kids tea and then you pick up work again and some of the stuff that we all do anyway. But actually what you do is you drive a more diverse workforce and diverse teams, and you probably increase your productivity in terms of and the outcomes that you drive. You know, this is for everybody. This is not just for those select groups that we've talked about over the last few minutes. Everybody benefits from that, and that's what's really exciting about this, I think.
Yeah, it's empowering your people, isn't it, to make their own decisions and live the life that they want to, rather than being hamstrung by rules, you know?
And when you're at work, you have to pretend that nothing else matters. That your job is the only thing that matters.
Yeah. Breakdown of the rules.
Like that.
So, Jax, thank you for that. It's been really good. If you were in a position to give yourself advice, so the Jax from 18 months ago who was wondering what to do, shall I make the jump, shan't I make the jump, what advice would you give that Jax 18 months ago?
So take a deep breath and be brave. Think about what being interim can give you in terms of your sense of purpose, working on exciting pieces of work, experiencing different cultures. I think for me, one of the things that I've really learned over the last 18 months is a lot of this is around mindset. So, you know, how you work, whether it be permanent or interim, is just almost to a certain extent, a very simplistic way, is a piece of paper. And actually, being interim has almost allowed me to give myself permission to be the person I want to be in a professional sense. But I would say be brave. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is believe in yourself and your capabilities. Think about who you are and who you want to be in an interim world and that brand that you want to build up. So reach out to your network, look for contacts and people that you know and trust that have been through that journey or that transition before. Link into them and draw support from them and guidance. And then find your path. Find people in the industry who really you're going to be able to work with in the future.
And one final point is we're not media specialists, so a lot of the podcasts are unwashed, but we will continue to bring you real people with real experience and real stories monthly for your consumption. So feel free to tweet at Pat Lynes, PATLYNES, for any feedback or just to connect.